Hello, DealScout listeners. My name is Gary Nucht. My 30-year career was dedicated to turning around distressed and underperforming companies and raising the capital needed to do that. Last year, we discovered a technology company that created a new low-cost, low-maintenance security that delivers the benefits of convertible notes, safes, and crowdfunding, but is continuous and open-ended with fixed dilution and secondary market trading. This new security is called a cafe, and our mission is to help founders launch a cafe in as little as 4 to 6 weeks. To learn more, head over to cafecentral.us and mention DealScout for a free consultation.
Good day, everybody. Welcome to the Deal Scout. On today's show, we're going to have a conversation about cafes. Gary, welcome to the show.
Nice to be here, Josh. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So, you know, pretty high level. Tell us what a cafe is.
The cafe is something that took 350 years to figure out. It is a new type of security that essentially looks at all the other financing options on the table for entrepreneurs, picked out all of the good parts, and wrote a lot of very clever language to block all the bad parts. It's a brand new tool. It's been out for about 6 months now. It lets entrepreneurs raise capital.
Okay. Before we dive into the weeds and the applications of this vehicle, tell us a little bit about you, Gary, and let's kind of go through your story, hear a little bit about how you got started and how you got involved in this.
I'll try to keep it short. I can run on sometimes. Graduated from the Wharton School. I worked for what used to be called a Big Eight back in those days, Deloitte. Worked for 3 privately owned companies. I was very fortunate. In the mid-90s, I met a gentleman who was in the turnaround business, and he had done some very big deals, bought some very distressed companies, turned them around, and sold them. He was looking for somebody to partner with him to do a very big acquisition, a $1.2 billion retail chain, which was Kmart Canada. And I jumped at the opportunity. It just looked very new and very exciting to me. And he offered to make me a partner in his business, which I had never been before. So we took off and we actually ended up buying the business. We were doing a turnaround. I was doing the business end of it. My partner was doing the people end of it. Surprisingly, within 18 months, our biggest competitor, Hudson's Bay, came in and made us an offer we couldn't refuse. That essentially put me into the turnaround business.
Got it.
And that gentleman and I, for the next 10 years, bought a lot of other companies, retail chains, distributors, all the same pattern. These were all essentially broken businesses that had been very healthy and profitable for a long time, and just something had gone off the rails and owners didn't want to spend any more time or money fixing it. So we had one after another after another.
So talk about being in the right place at the right time. Here you are, you know, you're working, you know, just get out of school or, you know, working at, you know, in CPA roles, counting numbers, spreadsheets and such like that. Hey, would you like to be a partner of this group? I do turnarounds. You're like, all right, sure. $2 billion first deal, right?
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. It was my introduction to Wall Street, lobster dinners at 3 a.m. It was kind of an amazing time.
Yeah. So let's go back to that time. Now, let's just say we're looking at the younger Gary and we're seeing him about to have a conversation with this gentleman who is going to get him involved in turnaround businesses. And like the first deal he did was over $2 billion. That's pretty awesome. What did that guy see in the young Gary that made him go, hey, I need some help. And I think you're the guy who could help.
I think it was just, like you said, a combination of circumstance. And I think the timing just got lucky. He had a partner doing what I was doing, the turnaround side, and they had just had a breakup. And he was looking for somebody new. And, you know, we bumped into each other. He brought it up and I said, that sounds irresistible. So I jumped in.
Yeah. Now, how old were you when you first got into turnarounds?
You're making me do math. I was 47.
Okay. Got it. So here you are, young guy, gets this really incredible opportunity. And you got introduced into this world of turnarounds. So in a day-to-day basis, you know, you were kind of the business side of it, turnaround side, and he was in charge of the people side. What was your day-to-day activities? What were you doing on, you know, you wake up, you clock in, you know, what did your activities look like?
Well, the first 6 months was very intense. It is full-time every day. I have a process, which I didn't at the time. It was kind of a, you know, learn as you go process. But what I did there and all of the other companies that I later acquired was, number one, talk to everybody. Turnarounds are difficult. You're walking into situations that are very stressful. Very often, the banks are very unhappy, or worse, they're threatening to shut things down. What I've learned over the years is that the answers are already there with the people that are inside the company. It's not necessarily the top rung or the second rung, but if you dig deep and you talk to people, you basically end up getting a very clear picture of what needs to be done to fix it. So that's what I do. First month or two is full-time talking to people up and down the ladder. You know, the next month is then strategic planning. I build teams, pulling from all the people that I talk to. We essentially throw out the organization chart, start fresh with the people that I, you know, I'm confident in can be part of the team to fix it.
Now, since that time, how many turnarounds do you feel that you've been a part of?
I've done 10, and 9 worked out beautifully. One was too far gone, just couldn't do it. But 9 had a phenomenal outcome. Companies, or all of them, are still thriving today.
Awesome. So with the turnaround, what do you specifically look for in a turnaround situation? Like, first, let's look at, how do you identify a company that might need a turnaround? And, you know, how do they come to you? How do you identify? And then I'll ask you other questions, I'm sure. But let's start there.
Yeah, that's actually the one that's the most difficult to figure out. Looking back, all of the deals that I ended up closing came to me through someone I knew. Because of that first deal, I developed a lot of contacts and connections in the U.S. financial market and in the Canadian financial market as well. And that network just kept growing and growing. And I would get a phone call one day, or my partner would. Remember, he's the people person. You know, we would get an inbound phone call unsolicited, and somebody would say, there's a company in trouble. It's something we think you should look at. So I got calls from, remember the old Arthur Anderson? I would get a call from an Arthur Anderson partner to look at a deal. I would get a call from a lender at a company who was lending money to a business that they were very unhappy with. And they said, you know, they would basically invite me to go have a chat with the owners.
Got it. So typically, this company owes someone money and they can't pay or something like that. And a red flag starts happening. The bankers go, we need our money. So who do we know that can go collect their money or that could help turn this around to a profitable thing? Let's call Gary, right?
Most of the time, by the time I get in, these are companies that if something isn't done in the next typically 3 to 6 months, the company is going to go under. And in that scenario, the lenders essentially have the worst outcome. They will recover the least amount of money on their loans. So again, not always, but a vast majority of the time, the lenders will prefer to have somebody come in, get the company restarted, rebooted, get it back to cash flow positive so that they can have ultimately a full recovery on their loans.
Yeah, that's awesome. So they call you and they go, we need help. And then Gary, how do you typically structure deals? So you walk in, you go, okay, cool. This company needs a lot of help. So as a turnaround guy, you go into a company and it's just like, all right, this company needs major help. How do you get paid? How do you structure the deal? I'm interested in turnarounds. It sounds fascinating. Like, how do you go about, you know, structuring the deal?
Okay, that's a little complex. I would say a typical deal would be a company that's doing a minimum of $50 million in revenue. Most were between $100 and $250 million. That multi-billion dollar company was the outlier. All of these businesses that I bought were either divisions or subsidiaries of larger corporate parents, or they were sitting in private equity funds that were at the end of the fund's life and had never sold. So again, unwanted businesses, pretty large size in retail distribution, or some business that has assets, inventories, receivables, and so on. So that's kind of a high-level criteria. The financing part, again, case by case, but in some cases, I would have partners, equity partners in the deal to help fund the business. I rarely write checks to buy these companies. Remember, they're in trouble. They're underperforming. they're not worth much more than liquidation value. So any money I bring to the business, it stays in the business to help as part of the turnaround. The seller always has an upside. If I'm successful and I sell the business to a strategic buyer 4, 5, 6 years down the road, typically the seller gets to participate in that as well.
Very cool. So as you were doing this, what was your favorite part of it besides the exit? You can't just say the exit, right? When the paycheck hits, you know, 9 out of 10, that's great results, by the way, or 9 out of 11, 9 out of 10. You've done
the 9 out of 10.
Yeah. Okay. So 90% hit rate. That's awesome. So besides the exit and getting the wire transfer or the cash out, what was your favorite part of the turnaround business?
That's easy. Remember, I mentioned when I start, I meet everybody. And that process is, you can't beat it. It's invigorating. It's motivating. It's giving people, I mean, just imagine this situation, right? You step into, you're working with people who are depressed and crushed and frustrated and stressed. And you're kind of the, you know, the new guy on the scene. They look at my track record. They say, oh, wait a minute. Maybe there's something here that's going to work. And they participate. These are the people that actually become all the team members. So if we're talking about logistics and distribution, or we're talking about IT, or we're talking about sales and marketing, all the people in the organization are assigned a new team, multidisciplinary team. And that's the most fun part. We strategize together. We throw ideas around. We make a very compelling case that everybody gets on board with, and then we execute the plan. To see the, you know, from depressed and anxious and worried about my job to we got this, that's just you can't beat that feeling.
So this is maybe a piece of advice you could give for companies out there, because you've turned around quite a few companies. When do you know, what are some signs in a company before they get themselves into trouble where they need a turnaround? What are some things that a company should pay, like a CEO or, you know, maybe high leadership, they should look at their company and go, hey man, if we don't do this, we're going to be in big trouble and need a guy like Gary to come bail us out.
Yeah. I mean, there's a huge track record of companies that didn't react fast enough to a downturn. The problem with companies that start to underperform is that there's a very clear spiral that you can see. You can see it perfectly in hindsight. The key is to be able to see that you've started that spiral. And what happens with a company, let's just take a retailer, for example. You have a retail chain that's, you know, competition has come in, beat it up quite a bit, and its revenues have fallen. If it doesn't do something about that, I can tell you with perfect clarity what's going to happen 1 month, 2 months, 3 months from now. And it's a vicious cycle. Cash flow will start to dry up. When you don't have cash flow, you can't pay your vendors. Vendors will stop shipping product. Your inventory mix will get out of balance because you can't get all the product you need. Your customers will be unhappy because they don't see what they like in the stores. I mean, that's not a mystery. That's all very predictable. So when a company is in the early stages of that, that's when I love to get involved, because as an advisor, I can help them sort it out and make the new game plan. If it's gone too far and the owners essentially are fatigued and don't want to put more time and money into it, that's my second option, because then I'm a buyer. So if it's early enough, I'm happy to work with the company ownership and management to get the turnaround. If it's far down and there's definitely either a sale or a liquidation in the next 3 to 6 months, I'm the buyer for that deal.
Right on. All right. So you did 10 businesses, and you know, then what? Because, you know, as we're exploring your life now and what the things you're doing on, there's a new vehicle out there that we're going to talk about. So, right. You know, you did 10 deals and you're like, looking back, you're like, wow, we really did good. We have a cool boat. We have a cool house, you know, like you get to do some cool traveling. Like, so talk us through, you just did your 10th company, you know, exited that. Now what?
Yeah. So I would say for the last 7, 8, 9 years, I've been doing a lot more advisory work for underperforming companies. I'm essentially semi-retired. You know, I take on projects when I want to. I'm lucky that way. Late last year, I was talking to my brother, who's a corporate attorney. He said to me that there was a technology company that had just essentially launched a new type of security. And he thought I might be interested in working with him on the finance side. He would do all the lawyering, I would do all the finance. And I took a look at this thing and I thought to myself, I'd never seen anything like it before. We looked at all of the documentation, read it with a fine-tooth comb. Although the documentation wasn't what I wanted it to be, it had everything I would hope would be in there. So my brother had been asked by the technology company to work as an advisor to entrepreneurs, to help them use this new type of security. And what my brother was finding was that all these entrepreneurs also had financial questions. They wanted questions about the company's value or about their cap table or about how the economics of the security work. And my brother said he needed help, somebody to do that with him. So I jumped in.
Okay. And that is the cafe, right?
That is the cafe.
All right. So now let's dive in. What is a cafe? What does it stand for?
CAFE, a continuous agreement for future equity, that will ring a bell with a lot of entrepreneurs because the immediately previous security that became very successful was a SAFE, S-A-F-E, which is a simple agreement for future equity. Essentially, what a CAFE is an equity security that has fixed dilution. It's open-ended. It can be open and raising money for as long as you want it to. There's no cap on the amount of money that company can raise with a CAFE. It's a digitized security, which trades on an automated market system. And it's essentially revolutionary in the sense that any accredited investor can buy these securities. It's sometimes most helpful to explain it by telling you what it does in comparison to other types of fundraising. So if you like, I can give you a few examples of that.
Yeah, I think that'd be great. So if you could do just a simple comparison of, you know, maybe a few different, like, hey, this is the problem with this one. This is how the CAFE helps.
Perfect. Okay. So dilution is the first big difference. When you raise money with a SAFE, the amount of dilution of your ownership that you're going to experience isn't known when you raise the money. It's dependent on the pricing of the next financing round. Typically, it's a Series A. So when you do a future raise, the pricing of that future round drives the amount of dilution of your SAFE. So a business owner will not necessarily know how much ownership they're giving up when that SAFE converts.
And that's terrifying, right? So I'm raising money in a future, you know, I don't know how much of my company, I might give away 5%, 50%, right?
It's a wide range. You can do things in the documents to cap it, but essentially it won't be known until there's that future raise. A CAFE is the exact opposite. A CAFE, you, the owner, determine what percent of ownership you're willing to allocate to the money you raise in a CAFE, and that's it, done. Doesn't matter how much money is ultimately raised with the CAFE. Number two, a SAFE or a convertible note, same thing. You essentially decide how much money you need to raise. You go and you find some investors, they put money into your business and you're done. If you want to raise 500,000 or 5 million, once you achieve that number, the offering is over. With a CAFE, it's again, the exact opposite. You still may target a raise of 500 or 2 million, but once you raise that money, the CAFE remains open and investors can continue to invest money in the CAFE. So you may target $1 million, you may end up with 2 million or 3 million. Third difference, and I think maybe the most important from an investor's point of view, is that these securities, they're called tokens because they're digital assets. These tokens that investors buy in the CAFE, after a 12-month holding period, can be sold. So there's a liquidity feature with a CAFE that does not exist with a convertible note or a SAFE. Essentially, if you're an investor with a SAFE or a convertible note, you have to wait until either they mature and you get your money back because it's debt, or there's a conversion on an IPO, and then hopefully you get to take your gains. With a CAFE, if you've held for 12 months, that's the mandatory holding period, you can now sell the token to somebody else. So if the token price has gone from 10 to 15 or 20 or 25, you can get liquid. You can sell it and recognize your gain.
See, that's huge right there for investors to be able to buy something and then have some type of liquid event, right? So you might go heavy on a deal, and then, you know, a year later, your daughter needs braces, or you want to go on a trip, or you want to buy a boat. This is now an opportunity. If the business has matured, you have the ability to sell off your portion. Or can you sell off a portion of your portion?
Absolutely.
Okay.
It's you can sell as much or as little as you want.
Yeah.
So, and with that feature, Josh, let me just think about this again from an investor's point of view. You've purchased tokens in a company. That token price will appreciate over time. So you have one opportunity for an upside, for a gain. The token also represents an ownership stake in the company when there's a future conversion. So you have a second venue for opportunity for gain. When you convert into equity of the company, if that company is sold or does an IPO, you can get your appreciation that way as well. That's a double win that you typically don't get with any other type of security. And let me just quickly add, because I tend to forget this, a convertible note and a safe are both debt. They go on your balance sheet as debt. And again, depending on what stage the company is in, that can crowd out other opportunities to raise money. A cafe is not debt. It stays off your balance sheet. The only thing that goes on your balance sheet is basically a footnote that says, when this cafe converts, it will convert into this type of equity, and it will take this much dilution from the cap table.
So when we're talking about safes and convertible notes, you say that they're a debt that stays on your balance sheet. How could that negatively affect a business on future cap raises or for future investors?
Great question. If you're looking to raise additional debt, lenders will look at coverage ratios, for example. If you already have debt on your books and you're asking a lender to put more money in the company, it will be a complex conversation because you'll have issues of priorities, who gets their money out first, and so on. And because you may have debt service, that means less cash is available to the new lender to be repaid on the new note. So a safe and a convertible debt does crowd out other abilities to raise capital. On the equity side, it's pretty much the same thing. Remember, a convertible note and a safe, if you're familiar with the term waterfall, if you look at any company's balance sheet, you'll see, starting with common stock and preferred stock and convertible notes and safes and cafes, there is a priority of distribution. So if the company is sold and there's X dollars available to distribute to all of the owners, there's a sequence to it. It's the waterfall. The reason investors like safes and convertible notes is because that puts them high up on the food chain. They'll get money before any type of other security. Again, good for investors, maybe not so good for business owners.
Okay. So let's play a game, right? So you and I are going into business and we need to raise some capital. All right. So I want you to kind of walk us through, when would you suggest maybe we should explore a safe, a note, a convertible note, or a cafe?
Companies are generally broken down into stage of development, right? So it's hard to generalize about that. But if you're early stage, number one, have you come up with something? Are you bringing something to market that's in demand and that's, you know, got a high profile among investors? So if you're technology related, you'll get attention, and you just have to do a good job of promoting your business to investors who are interested in technology. If you're into hard goods, hardware, there aren't many investors that are looking at any of that today. So you may have something that's the next best thing, but it's going to be a struggle. So number one, you know, think carefully about who your investor audience will be. And there's lots of ways to do that. You know, there are loads and loads of databases out there where you can do a lot of research, filter by types of investors to get, to essentially narrow it down to a group that will be more inclined to want to look at what you're offering. In terms of deciding what kind of capital raise to do, you start with a view that says, well, what kind of investors do I want in my business? You'll reach out to friends and family. You'll reach out to your contacts people who know people who know people, and to try to find somebody to invest. And you'll be thrilled because you've got two or three people willing to put in $500,000 each, and you know, there's your money. The problem with that path is that a small number of high dollar investors kind of think by default that they have some degree of influence over how you run your company. These people are experienced typically. They're investing in your company because they might know something about your product or service, and they will want to express their point of view as to how you do things. All of that's good, but sometimes that creates conflict. You may have an entirely different vision of where to go, and you're going to bump heads. The beauty of the cafe is that the ownership tends to be very widespread and diverse. If you read about it in the press, a cafe is often called the democratization of equity. And essentially what that means is that if you have followers, Instagram, Facebook, if you have customers, anybody who can meet the accreditation requirements can invest in your company. The most successful companies that are using cafes have some type of tech-related service. Anything that has a widespread application is perfect for a cafe because your customers can also own a piece of your company. My advice is, if you're a traditional company bringing traditional product or service to market, it's okay to look at a safe initially, because the security that a safe provides to the investor may be able to track some big dollars for you. But if you're a company that is looking for wider ownership and a wider community, a cafe is perfect for you.
Now, this isn't a crowdfunding vehicle, but
no.
So explain, when you say a wider community of, you know, investors, explain the differences maybe between just a crowdfund versus the cafe in terms of the community reach and community engagement.
Crowdfunding originally came out in 2005, 2006. You might remember, if you're old enough, there was a rock band that invented crowdfunding, essentially. They wanted to do a tour, and they raised capital based upon the money they were going to generate on the tour, and all their fans came in and invested in them. In 2012, I think it was, the Jobs Act was passed, and that created Regulation CF. And it essentially said, you can now raise capital under Reg CF with very strict limits on the dollar amount. You don't need accredited investors. Anybody can put money in, but it's limited based upon a percent of income test. So what evolved over, you know, 2006 to now is that crowdfunding went nuts. Between traditional crowdfunding and Reg CF, the forecasts are that $1 trillion will have been invested in crowdfunding by 2025, which is staggering. The problem with crowdfunding is, if you look into the details, you'll see that the average investor spends less than $1,000. The average company that goes on crowdfunding platform to raise money only raises $30,000 on average. And more than 80% do not meet their goal. So when you go on a crowdfunding platform, you state how much money you're hoping to raise, put that number out for everybody to see. If you don't raise that amount of money, the crowdfunding campaign is canceled and all your money goes back. So crowdfunding obviously has some great notable exceptions and successes, but for the most part, I view crowdfunding as you know, kind of a hobby. I guess I could say a one-trick pony. If you've got a particular product or service that's hot and you want to raise some money to get it out to market, you know, give crowdfunding a shot. If you're a more serious business and you're in it for the long term and your products are going to evolve over time and you've got a marketing plan that's not just make as much money as you can in the shortest period of time, the more serious company and business owner will want to do something like a cafe. You can also have that wide, diverse audience. Depending on how you file with the SEC, you can freely advertise on social media. As a result of that, you're likely to attract a more serious investor. And if you've got a following, if you've got fans or customers or suppliers, any of those can invest in your business.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. So with a cafe, depending on how you're filing, I could then talk on my LinkedIn about it, right? I could go, hey, just let you know, I have a cafe. If you're an accredited investor, let's have a conversation, right?
Exactly, right.
Now, with a safe or convertible note, are you able to do those things? Or I know with a smaller crowdfunding, you can, but do are you allowed to do that? Or what's different on the cafe that you can't do for the others?
You're allowed to. It's just that you're not, remember, with a convertible note or a safe, you're really looking to kind of get lucky and find just a handful of investors to do the whole raise for you.
But with the cafe, you could do it multiple times and it could just go continuous. That's what the
exactly.
CFE said. Okay,
that's
cool.
Exactly right.
So for, you know, what stage of the business should, you know, does a cafe have the best impact?
It's any stage. And this is a good time to mention, Josh, too, that a cafe is not mutually exclusive with anything else. I talk to companies all the time who are actively pursuing a safe or just may have completed a safe. And they're very happy. But when you say to them, well, what's your dilution? They say, yeah, well, we'll see. A cafe can be run simultaneously with any of those other financing vehicles. So my advice always is, if you're in the process of doing a safe, don't drop it, finish it, raise the capital, but maybe prepare yourself for a parallel raise to a wider community. No harm in having, you know, some heavyweight investors in your business, but also super helpful to have a diverse investment community alongside that.
Got it. Now with the cafe, let's just say you and I, we started our business and we have a cafe in place. Can I pick and choose who my investors are? So someone comes to me and they says, hey, I'm an investor and I'd like to invest. Can I say, hey, thank you. You're just not a fit for this. And, you know, but your buddy is, you know, and I can, you know, invest money from say yes to one person and no to another. Do you have the availability to do that, to pick your investors?
No, you don't. There is a review process. You have to be verified. Mm-hmm. As accredited. The thing about a cafe is it's low cost and low maintenance. Once it's up and running, it takes care of itself. Crowdfunding, you're constantly feeding your fans with information about the product development, what's going on, who your new clients are. With a cafe, you set it and forget it. You create it, you broadcast it, you get your investors, and it's off and running. The trading that goes on, whether it's an initial buyer of tokens in the cafe, or whether it's subsequent secondary trading, which by the way, can be to non-accredited investors, which is an important point to remember. What all of that trading activity is basically no touch. They have to be qualified as accredited investors, but beyond that, you're just kind of watching the thing raise money.
But in the secondary market, it does not need to be accredited?
That's exactly right. Those are the rules. Once you've gotten past that 12-month holding period, you can sell your token to anybody, accredited or otherwise.
That is awesome.
It is awesome.
All right. So let's talk about some of the terms of you and I are in business and we're going to set up a cafe. How do we determine what we set our terms to be? So give me an example of how we would go about structuring the deal.
Perfect. There's a document. In that document, the offering document, there are, I'm going to say, between 15 and 20 decisions that you, the business owner, need to make. And the way we go through that is literally point by point. With each of those decisions, our job as the facilitator to help you get your cafe up and running, our job is to explain the choices, the pros and cons of each one, and then help you make the decisions. We do that 15 times. I'll give you an example. There are two related decisions that are really important. Number one, what triggers a conversion? Remember, a cafe at some point in the future will convert into some form of equity of your company. That's the dilution, right? Mm-hmm. You have to decide what the triggering events are. What is it that will cause a conversion? And there's a lot of options. You know, the obvious ones are a sale or IPO, but there are some less obvious ones too. Change of control, for example. So we help you understand what all of the options are. You can put in your cafe as many or as few triggering events as you like. We walk you through that. The related question, the flip side of the triggering event question, is what does the cafe convert into? And again, lots of choices, and we'll walk you through all the options. You may decide it converts into a Class B non-voting stock. You may decide it converts into a junior preferred stock. Lots of strategy here. And we walk you through each of those for all of those questions. And when we're done, you're ready to go.
So this could go continuous, right? So I get in round one. I'm like, man, that was fun. I'm in, you know, in the cafe. And then, you know, 6 months down the line, I go, you know what? I want to get in again. So with this vehicle, I'm allowed to jump back in. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. An investor can invest as often as they like. One thing to keep in mind, and we haven't really talked about the economics of a cafe yet, but keep in mind, well, I haven't mentioned it yet, so you can't keep it in mind. Remember, when you launch a cafe, you come up with what your targeted raise will be. You might say, I'd like to raise $1 million. And you set the dilution fixed up front. You also set the token price. So if you're looking to raise $1 million and you set a $10 token price, you're going to sell 100,000 tokens, right? Until that $1 million is raised, all of the investors are paying the same price, the $10 price. Once you reach the $1 million mark, now the dynamic changes and the platform, the automated trading platform where your securities are held, has an algorithm built into it so that after the $1 million, every additional investment into the cafe causes an adjustment of the token price. So it's based on essentially the cumulative amount of money that's invested and the cumulative amount of tokens that are sold. And the system automatically calculates that. So after the initial $1 million amount is raised, the token price starts to increase. And that's where you end up with appreciation in the token. Again, if you've held your token for 12 months and the token price has gone up to 15 from 10, you can sell it and take your $5 per token gain.
So when you start a cafe, you kind of say, okay, what are we really trying to accomplish here? But you get the opportunity to set the amount raised, the token price, and the dilution amount. So you could say $1 million, I'm going to raise token price $10 and dilution for X percentage of conversion. Okay.
Exactly right. Okay. Yeah. So now if you're an investor, it's good to be an early investor in a cafe because that's when you're buying at the base price. You can buy at $10 a token. Once that threshold, in our example, $1 million is reached, that token's going to go to 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. You can continue to buy. If you're an investor, you can buy at 12. You can buy at 14, 15, 16, all the way up. You can sell that liquidity feature. You can sell those tokens as long as you've held them for 12 months. So you may be selling some tokens that you bought at 10. You may be selling some tokens that you bought at 12 or 15.
Got it. So I might buy something and then, someone said, I'm going to raise $1 million if we're going to do 1 million shares or 1 million tokens. And I buy a bunch, right? And then over time, a bunch of other people, 12 months later, it's almost sold out. My initial price might have gained value just through appreciation, having nothing to do with the value of the company, just the token appreciation.
That's exactly right. Now, there's no such thing as sold out.
Yeah.
Because remember, it's just an open-ended offer.
Yeah.
So you'll just continue to raise money for as long as investors want to invest.
Okay. But if you set the raise, like I'm going to raise $1 million and you oversubscribe, now I hit my million in month one, but I could keep it going.
You could keep it going. You could raise 2 million, 3 million, 5 million.
Yeah. Let's raise 10, right? All right. So
now, at some point there's common sense that comes into this. If you fix dilution at, let's say 10%, and you're expecting to raise $1 million and you're wildly successful and you've raised 2 million, 3 million, 5 million. At some point in time, common sense has to come into play and say, wait a minute, if I want to invest my next dollar in the cafe, I'm only going to participate in a 10% pool. That dilution, remember, is fixed. Mm-hmm. Now, this is a little complex, but at some point in time, you're going to say, I'm not sure I want to invest more money in the cafe because no matter how much money I invest, I'm only participating in a 10% conversion. When that happens, the company itself, the owners, the entrepreneur, can adjust. So if you've raised too much money, you can say, well, I'm going to increase my dilution from 10% to 15%. And that essentially will help bring that back into balance to keep the investments flowing.
Let's just say I only need 1 million, but I'm like, man, I'm going to raise in the future. And this fundraising process is brutal. Why not just raise 5 million and have 4 million in the coffer, right? But yep. You're saying, hey, it's actually dangerous to raise too much too soon. Why so, in your opinion?
because the dilution and the amount raised have to be based on reality. Number one, investors won't continue to invest in your cafe unless the dilution matches the value. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, that's number one. Within the cafe documents itself, the owner maintains the right to pause it. So if you need $1 million and you raise $1 million, you pause the cafe. The securities continue to trade, but you can stop raising money. And you would stay in that stage as you deploy that capital you've raised to meet what your next round of activities are. If your next round is to do beta testing and you needed $1 million to do the beta test, you would pause the cafe, execute on your beta test. And then when you come to the next round, which may be regional deployment of your product or service, you might reopen the cafe to raise new capital. It essentially allows you to avoid having to go the traditional route, which is start with a safe or a convertible note, then do a Series A, then raise more money, do a Series B, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
This is an awesome way of just really simplifying the whole capital raising process. And it's inexpensive. You can literally be up and running with a cafe in as little as 4 weeks.
So if someone's interested in exploring this, they're about to do a cap raise. You know, we get hit up all the time through LinkedIn. People go, hey, we're raising money, right? Yep. And I go, okay, where are you at in the process? And, and I say, well, maybe you guys should explore a cafe. And they come to you and they go, okay, so walk me through the high level process, cost, and, you know, and what does it look like? What would you guys do to help them through this?
So the process is pretty straightforward. There's an offering document, which I mentioned that a little while ago. It's got those questions that we're going to work through with you one at a time, so we can craft how the cafe works. That part of the process involves you, the owner. You may want to have your CPA or your CPA firm involved in those discussions. You probably want to have your attorney involved in those discussions, just so everybody's on board and can help the owner make the right decision. So that's a process that typically takes a couple of weeks. Again, there aren't that many questions, but you know, between the discussion and the follow-up and the kind of the collaborative process that it takes to get to a comfortable decision on each of these questions, you know, allow 2 weeks for that. While that process is happening, and by the way, that's what I do mostly, is help you, a business owner, understand all those choices. While that's happening, on the legal side, we're doing paperwork for you. You're going to have to file a safe harbor exemption with the SEC. It's a notification. It's not a process that requires SEC approval. So it's just a formality, essentially, that tells the SEC you're going to do a cafe. We have to work on the legal side with your corporate documents. We'll likely have to do some amendments to allow for a new type of security, authorization of new shares, you know, all that boring stuff that the lawyers do. So there's a whole legal process that has to be worked through. There's another component to this, which is strategy. You may or may not have been through the exercise of determining how much your company is worth or how much your investors think your company's worth. When you pick a dilution percentage, for example, the dilution percent is the result of the valuation piece. What's your company worth today and how much capital you're looking to raise, right? Yep. The company's worth $5 million and you're looking to raise $1 million. That suggests a 20% dilution. We do all of that strategic thinking with you. We help you craft the document. We do all the lawyering and registration. There may be some state filings as well that may be required. We do all that. We are essentially the workhorse that gets you from a standing start to launch. All of that can take 4 weeks, 5 weeks, and you're live, you're raising money. The cost of it, all inclusive, it's a pretty big range. If you only need the legal work done, the whole thing can cost as little as $8,500, which blows me away. If you're looking for a full-blown process with all of the valuation conversations and the strategies and the pricing, all of that, the upside, kind of the top end of that range, is 18, 19, 19.5. So that's it. 8,500 to 19,500 is the whole thing.
Now, for anybody who's raised capital in the past, they know that there's a cost for acquiring capital. Like, how does this compare with maybe SAFE or convertible note or crowdfunding, like in terms of cost for capital raise?
It's easy to look at it this way. Crowdfunding, the platforms take, if you will, would be anywhere from typically 10 to 12%. If you're doing a SAFE, you might have a business broker that you're working in who's helping, you know, find your investors and the law firm.
That cost could range anywhere from $25,000 all the way up to $75,000.
It's the time element that is really the most difficult when you do a convertible note or a SAFE. Essentially, you're negotiating an individual contract for each investor. You'll start out with a boilerplate of your proposed terms, letter of intent. But then as each investor comes in, they're going to say, well, I want this, I want that, I want this. So it's very time consuming. Yeah. And there's typically a lot of due diligence that gets involved as well. With a CAFE, we've taken the original CAFE template, the documents, and recrafted them, shredded them. We tore them apart and rebuilt them. So it's very robust. As I mentioned, it's a process, but it's very simple, one step at a time. And that's why we can get it done in 4 weeks.
So for a group out there that's looking to raise, what would be like the smallest amount you would want to probably raise with a CAFE?
If you kind of do the math in reverse, just as a rule of thumb, I would say that the minimum amount to not have the fees be disproportionate to the amount raised should be $500,000. If you're at $500,000 or higher, you're actually going to pay less for a CAFE than you would for just about any other type.
Got it. So for our entrepreneurs out there, you know, angels, VC guys, you know, guys and gals that are, you know, raising money for businesses and they want to explore CAFE and working with you, like what's a good way for them to connect with you and do a deal with you?
Two ways. You can either go to our website, which is cafecentral.us. I think we've got now six companies that have launched CAFEs that you can take a quick look at. And by the way, this is a good website for investors to visit as well to see what kind of CAFEs are available to invest in. So that's one way, cafecentral.us. And there's lots of buttons on that website that you can schedule a call. Or my email address is gary@cafecentral.us. Send me a message and happy to connect.
Very cool. Was there a question or something about CAFEs? And, you know, because this is kind of high level and we could always come back and maybe look at like deal by deal basis and such. But are there any questions that I should have asked you that I completely screwed up and didn't ask you?
No, I think you got it right. Okay. I think you did a great job. Whew.
Okay, I get to keep my job over here in the podcast world. All right. So ladies and gentlemen, listening into this podcast, all their contact information from our guests will be in the show notes. So if you're listening in, you're driving, please drive safely. And then when you get to your destination, you could go to the show notes, click, connect directly with Gary and with our sponsors and with the partners that are participating in this Deal Scout. Our mission is to put deals together, to help people and deals go faster. So if you have a deal you'd like to talk about, or are you looking at a specific deal, you can head on over to thedealscout.com, fill out a quick form, maybe get on the show next. Till then, hope you guys are having an awesome freaking day. See you on the next episode. Bye-bye.